Good morning, planet Earth, and if you're listening on the shortwave radio, good evening. Good morning, planet Earth. It is 10.06 a.m. as of this recording, but if you're listening on 5950 kilohertz WRMI out of Miami, then it could be Saturday night, it could be Sunday night, but since we're recording it today, July the 18th, Sunday, it is Sunday, and this will be Sunday night, even though I'm recording it in the morning. Right, buddy? July the 18th, 2021. Are you planting your fields? It's time to bring in the harvest, to bring in the cattle, to shoe the horse. Yes, indeed, this is the Planetary Status Report, and if you're interested in the notes for this show, just go to dfgtc.org/shownotes. That's online. That's on the internet, and you can get to the notes for this show. And I am lucky today to have in the studio a good friend of mine, a mystery guest. We can call him Mr. Mystery Radio.
Or Justin. Call me Justin. It's all right.
Or Mr. Mystery Radio. Mr. Mystery Radio, right?
Sure. I'll take that.
I don't know, man. How you doing today?
I'm good. Got an early start. Well, I say early. I did sleep in. Got a couple cups of coffee in me, and I'm ready to go. Excited to be on the radio.
Well, so here's the thing. Over a couple podcasts in recent weeks, and while sitting outside and talking, I've mentioned this weird commercial out of Japan that you'll see on YouTube for this knife called the Husk knife. You remember us talking about that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the made by hand. Made. One at a time.
Yeah, so I saw it again yesterday, and I had to take a screenshot because it says made by hand. All these knives being sold on the internet below cost are being made by hand.
It says by hands or out of hands.
Listen to it. In the screenshot, it says he makes them by hand using a century-old traditional forging technique. Does that sound like a laser?
No lasers.
Does that sound like an auto lathe or a CNC or a robot? A robot? Does that sound like a robot?
Oh, man. An automaton, perhaps.
Centuries-old water-powered robot. An ancient Japanese imperial robot. But it's sad. It lost its true love, the dragon Akiyamido. During the Great War, the war between the Shoglamites and the Shinto priests and the Shogun hobos and the... I don't know where I'm going with this, Justin. Anyways, I don't see how any of this makes sense. How does it make any sense at all?
I don't know. I do know a bunch of 16-year-olds that get obsessed with two things, YouTube and knives. So I can understand there being a market for this kind of stuff.
But how do you make a knife using century-old techniques by hand, sell it below cost, and how do you do that?
Well, one of two things. I really like your, it's possessed by the devil, and it will instill a lust for murder within your veins. But also, we are completely surrounded by lies. 360 degrees surrounded by lies, so why not a YouTube commercial?
but let me ask you a question. Susan Wojcicki.
Is that how you say her name?
Susan Wojcicki. Susan Wojcicki. Susan, what the fuck? Oh, what the hecky?
Yeah.
That's FCC talk for... what the hecky? I don't know how you say her name. Every time I say it, I taste vomit in my throat. She's the CEO of YouTube. She was given the Freedom Award from YouTube for being a supporter of freedom. This was like a week or two before she deleted my account. That's really good. No, Susan Wojcicki is on a mission to remove accounts from YouTube that spread misinformation. Wouldn't you consider the sale of a knife using century-old handheld hand-forged techniques below cost to be potentially misinformation? I mean, or demons. Which one is it? Is it the demons? We're on Hanlon's razor now. Is it that the knives have a demon curse on them? So if you buy the Husk knife, you're going to want to Husk somebody with it. And they do look damn sharp. And there is, in the video, he's cutting something that catches fire. Oh. Now, implication is the knife is super hot and super sharp when he's doing it. But what if it's just the power of Satan in the knife as it's cutting through whatever ping pong ball or actual testicle that is cutting through?
That could be the most honest part of the whole commercial.
I don't know. This is a weird, weird subject. We're going to move on to the next topic because it's too silly to focus on that one. Next subject is graduation. So I read a news article recently, and I think it was Baltimore, could be Atlanta, some hellhole beyond the Rockies. They have students, like more than half their students are graduating with these GPAs that are like less than like 1 or something.
Really?
Less than 1.0 or something.
Really?
Like that. Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
So my question is, is there going to be a GPA in the future that is going to be so small that you will need a powerful supercomputer just to calculate it? Like, it'll be so tiny, infinitesimal, that you'll need super geniuses in your class just to measure the GPAs of the people that can't get the grades.
Wow. You know, school is hard, and that would make it harder.
It would make it a trip, dude. Someone says to me, what's your GPA this year? And I said, well, it's 5 × 10⁻³. What's that? Well, if you go 0.00000000, and then an hour later, well, maybe 10 minutes later, because I only have to do that like a couple hundred times. So I could do that in 5 minutes, right?
Yeah.
And then my friend says, that means you graduate, right? It's not zero.
It rounds up to a B.
It rounds up to at least a 1. And if you take the ceiling of the 1, listen, we're doing new math here. This is futuristic critical race theory mathematics. You take the near zero, you round it, you take the ceiling, which brings you to 1. Then you treat the space between 1 and 4 as a racist encampment. Meaning you get to take the mathematical ceiling of all the racist armies between you and a 4.0. You get to an A++. And then you graduate summa cum loudly. summa cum loudly. What do you think?
I don't know. I do. We've got youngins in school, and I don't think they stand a chance. I think between the curriculum and the way things are in the world, they have no want to for education. They see what it's gotten everybody else, which is in debt. You know, if you say you do.
Look at my wealth. I have all these degrees, man. Look at how rich I am.
Exactly.
I'm so rich. When you picked me up in Seattle, man, I had what? A couple boxes?
A couple, yeah.
That's wealth. That's power.
A lifetime supply of stuff, yeah.
Since I didn't expect to be alive 60 days past that point, and so right now, can you believe I'm still alive? It's kind of like great news I'm still alive, you know? I can't believe it. No, I don't know, dude. When I was a kid, this was the formula. You go to college, you get a good job, you get married, everything works out. That's what we were told.
Yeah, not only works out, but works out great, and you are living in the literal American dream.
Yep. and then something went wrong. And what we're told is, well, it's because people are eating bad food. And this is what I love about the system, because they have this elegant way of taking all the wretched things that the powerful do and focus it on the people that have no power. It's like they'll say, well, you shouldn't eat all that bad food, right? Right? Don't eat all that bad food.
No. Nope.
The problem is Mr. and Mrs. Wretched working for Mr. and Mrs. Wretched working for Monsanto or ADM. Yeah, they get organic vegetables. But the food they make for you, that's the stuff they get angry about. They make money poisoning us, and then they yell at us for being poisoned. They yell at us for being poisoned, and they make their wealth poisoning us. I know that sounds maybe like an oversimplification, but I've met people who work in the quote-unquote technological elite world, and they have access to what I would call clean food, or at least cleaner food. And when I say clean food, I don't mean it's food that doesn't have poop on it. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about food that might be raised in such a way that it's not filled with toxins and heavy metals and whatever other gumbus is falling from the sky every single wretched day, you know? Because even when we, like, okay, Justin,
you think we end up eating that? I guess.
Microplastics? If they're finding them in women's placentas?
Oh.
That's another, look it up. There's a news article out there. Google women's placentas, microplastics. Not a really good read.
I never even thought about it.
So I think if they're ending up in placentas, yeah, they're in the food, buddy. That's why I'm saying it. I saw this really silly, silly PSA on Tim and Eric's, you know, on Adult Swim like 15 years ago.
Yeah, I never watched Tim and Eric's, but I've seen the commercials.
It's terrible. But they had this one called All the Food is Poison.
It's funny how they tell us the truth. It takes Tim and Eric at 11 o'clock on a Cartoon Network to tell us the truth.
All the food is poison. And how does that connect to having the smallest GPA in the history of GPAs? One cannot know for certain, but I gotta say, folks, when I was a kid, that was the argument. You go to college, you get a job, you get married, your life works out. And I don't know, maybe it was the corn. It's like I'm saying it was the corn syrup, right? It was, if we just didn't eat things with corn syrup. The problem is, corn syrup is in everything.
Everything. Everywhere. it's, I guess, you know, it's far much cheaper to eat corn syrup than it is real sugar. And not eating sugar at all is just out of everybody's budget.
Yeah, exactly. Another thing, too, they'll say, well, it's the drugs. But then think about the drugs the system forces on kids. I mean, for all intents and purposes, drugs like Ritalin, these are the drugs. Ritalin chemically is not that different from what the Luftwaffe gave Nazi fighter pilots towards the end of the war because they didn't have enough pilots. We took that idea. Do you know they still do that with the Air Force?
Oh, yeah. Adderall, I hear. The pilots take Adderall.
That's a fancy name for crystal meth.
Yes, yes.
It's a fancy name for methamphetamine. Call it Adderall. Call it Ritalin. Call it Uncle Mike's secret powder. It's simply meth. You know, the oral meth is a time release meth. That's good. But can't you just like mash it up and then snort it?
Yeah.
So then the time release is bogus then. I mean, there's cellulose in it, so you're snorting cellulose or whatever filler material they use to put their magical pills together. So I suppose that could hurt you. But do they even give a crap? No. So they'll say, well, it's the drugs. But again, I call BS because they're the ones selling the drugs.
They're the ones making all the money off the drugs. Yeah.
And they'll say, well, we don't have enough money for schools, but they're the ones that print the money. Aren't they the ones that print the money?
Yeah, yeah. Print just a little bit more. Do an extra run. And let's get some new books in school.
And I'm sure the new books will make the students dumber.
Yes. That's par for the course. That's how it's going.
I don't know. I said this a few weeks ago. I'll say it again. Government is a machine where you feed it real opportunity, and what it produces are problems.
More problems.
It's like every opportunity, all the wealth, all the potential, it sucks it in, and then it just farts out, poops out issues, problems, disasters. Public schools, definitely one of them.
Definitely. Yeah. And you know, it creates systemic issues as that stuff gets built into society. No good comes out of it. I mean, where are all the smart children? They've been dumbified. Never to input into society.
No, none of their potential realized. And on a serious note, if you're asking how do we survive, we do not survive by dumbing down the younger generations. That's how we destroy ourselves. That's one of the ways we become extinct, by creating institutions by which kids become dumber. Listen, folks, we have real problems in the world. It's probably not the race war. It's probably not the monkey herpes. It's probably not any of the other crap they feed you. But there are real things we need to deal with. And having multiple generations of people that can't solve problems without a tablet or a smart device, that's spooky. That's worrisome.
It is. You know? Yes. I'll leave it at that.
I don't know. Next topic. I didn't even want to read much about it, but do you hear that they're talking about how the moon is wobbling and maybe causing flooding?
A moon wobble.
The moon is wobbling. It's wobbling in space. Now, me, I'm interested. I want to know what's causing it to wobble. When I was a kid, there was a store. I forget the name of it. It had a really weird name, but all it sold was like these little tricks, you know, like fake poop and stuff like that.
Oh, like a novelty shop.
Imagine, put on your imagination helmet, Justin. Everyone, put on your imagination helmet. Imagine you're the most advanced alien species in the universe. Your species was the first to arise from the Gumptus juice 3.6 billion years ago. You built cities of crystal and light and diamonds. People snorted uranium. They flew in spaceships faster than light. Their arms were made of titanium. Their sexual organs were powered by love. Billions of years ago, these aliens, after doing everything, got really, really bored. They got bored, Justin. They were the first transgalactic, transcendental, transsexual species. So advanced and so insane. What do you do if you have been a type 2, type Z? Where's Michio Kaku when you want to call him on the phone? What do you do when you're an advanced, supergalactic, transcendental species civilization? You've been there for about 100 million years and you're really, really bored.
You get crazy.
So they said, what if we start doing this? There are these little creatures, you know, the ones we call Fructo Freaks? They're on planetoid XZ90Z. They're really funny little freaks. They make a funny little noise when they laugh. They go, hey, zabada, zabada. Wouldn't it be fun to mess with creatures like that? And so the scientists of the super advanced civilization decide to build these perfectly round, moon-like novelty moons. Periodically, inside, with a giant spring, they basically start wobbling. It's like they're looking up saying, whoa, man, the moon is wobbling. We're going to have to call Bruce Willis. He has to fix the moon. Get up there, Bruce. With your laser beam penis. Go there, Bruce. So what if that's the explanation for the moon wobble? What if that's the most reasonable, logical, rational explanation that our moon is not some chunk of whatever gump it is that came out of some stupid collision with some planet billions of years ago. What kind of crap is that? What if the moon was put there by aliens who just got that frickin' bored?
Wow. Oh, man. With all the malarkey surrounding the moon, maybe it is true when... Who was it said that the moon was hollow? It rang like a bell.
You know, I heard that.
Yeah. One of the people who did the moonwalk said that. And maybe he is the one who activated the spring.
The pressure-sensitive spring.
Yeah, and maybe it starts out slow at first. And then it builds and builds and builds and moon wobble.
But then, here's what happens next. And this is the catastrophe. And this is how bored those aliens were. Because when you get that bored, you get kind of sociopathic. Because when you think about it, if you're building a multi-trillion ton novelty device, something goes awry, it can hurt a lot of people.
Sure.
Like, what if the moon is designed to split open and then pop out some funny message? But the funny message basically weighs more than the asteroid that killed the dinosaurs. So you're looking at this giant message coming towards the Earth, and it's and you can't read it because they didn't know what we would be speaking. When they put the moon there, we were little fructo freaks. We were about 8 inches tall. We had a brain the size of a peanut. We'd go around jacking off and pulling each other's nutsacks. What the heck did we know? Right? When they put it there.
Certainly couldn't read.
Couldn't read. Couldn't write good. Didn't know math. But we certainly did have a cute little laugh, and those sociopathic bored aliens love that. They're going to have fun in about, I don't know, 500 million years when this giant sign, bigger than the asteroid that killed the dinosaurs, made out of titanium and neutronium, which is pure neutron material. That's what the center of black hole is made out of. And it's coming towards the Earth. You know who the joke is on at that point?
Who?
Us. The joke is on us. Fucking alien. I mean, sorry. Those aliens.
Ugh.
I swore, I'm sorry, FCC. I kind of swore. No, you know what I said? I said, clucking aliens. They cluck like chickens. That makes sense. Doesn't it all make sense?
Well, hold on. So did you read any of the article? What does it say is going
to
happen?
There are articles now. There are articles now I refuse to read. I'll read the headline. I won't even touch what's inside because I figure I lose an IQ point every time I read an article like that. But yeah, this is one of the ones I just read the headline. I don't even want to know. It says, wobbling's causing flooding. Okay, so it must be a new thing, right? Because it hasn't been wobbling before. Or was this newly discovered that all floods are caused by the moon wobble?
Oh, boy.
You see, here's the thing. I don't think the moon wobble is causing the flooding.
No.
But I do think geoengineering might be causing the flooding.
It could be. You know? It could be. We're here in the Southwest. Just saw flash flood pictures from Zion.
Yeah.
From Flagstaff. You know, that's not too far from us.
No.
You know,
but
it's
hot as F here.
Yeah, it sure is. It sure is.
It's weird. They tell us that it's all normal. It's just normal, and it's climate change, or it's something else, but it seems weird. It seems strange to me. But I don't know, dude. Maybe the moon wobble does cause flooding. Maybe the aliens did us a favor by creating a giant novelty satellite that orbits the Earth like a sword of Damocles at some point will open up, release a giant sign. The sign says you're screwed, but in an alien language... And you know what? The NSA will crack it. This is the best part of the story. 5 minutes before the giant sign hits the Earth, the NSA cracks it and it says, you're screwed.
The very last task for the NSA supercomputers.
You're screwed. Have a nice... No, it actually says, have a nice day.
See you next time.
See you... No, better luck next time.
Better luck next time.
Better luck next time, little fructo freaks. Better luck the next time the cockroaches or the pigeons or the whale pigeons. Better luck when the frogmen take over. Keck, right? Keck.
Yep.
When the frog people or the snake people or the crow people
The jellyfish beast.
The jellyfish beast of the year 4586. Will they do better than us the next time? I don't know.
What level will they make it to? What level did we make it to?
Okay, so Type 1 civilizations supposedly have control of solar mass levels of energy. So, like, they have fusion energy that's sustainable. They can use fusion energy. They can use planetary scale energies. They basically have solved all the problems we can't solve. That's what a type one is.
So we're still in the ghetto.
We're type zero, yeah. We haven't even made it there yet. In fact, according to that cosmology, it looks like we're unlikely to make it to any of those places. But we don't know.
We haven't figured out how to power our cars without killing somebody.
Exactly. Or better, but maybe more apropos, we haven't figured out how to power our cars either by killing someone or using someone's dead body from billions of years ago.
Either or.
But at least we have a moon that wobbles. So a friend of mine sent me an article, and the article was about Boeing being prepared for a future. A lunar commercialization is on the horizon. The article is written by Cindy Mailer of Boeing's Research and Technology. And I'm not going to read the whole thing. I read parts of it. But it's all about all the fancy technology that's right here, right now. And isn't it interesting? You've got Richard Branson. He went a whole fucking what? About 50 miles?
61 miles.
61 miles up. 61. And that's funny because in 1961, Shepard went up about 60 miles.
Yeah.
That's funny. He went up 61 miles.
In a literal tin can.
In a tin can. And Bezos is getting ready to do the same thing, right? To go about 50 or 60 miles.
Yeah, something like that.
With a Dutch baby, a little Dutch guy.
Oh, yeah? I hadn't got that deep into the story.
Well, not a baby, a Dutch teenager. But I think Dutch baby is appropriate, too. I don't know. We'll find out. We'll find out if he ends up getting his goose cooked.
Oh, boy.
But, it seems like it's all very rushed. It's like when they say they're going to go to the moon like this year or next year, and they're going to Mars in a couple years. It all seems like a last-minute thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Doesn't it seem thrown together? Like, okay, Burt Rutan, the team that won the XPRIZE, Virgin Galactic is built on their work. So the Virgin Galactic rocket plane is based upon Burt Rutan's plane. And in 2003... maybe four, but I think it was three, Burt Rutan won the XPRIZE. He took someone up twice. They took people up.
That's right. That was the stipulation. You had to go back.
Yeah, yeah.
The same craft.
And they did it. They did it. And that was 2003. That was almost 20 years ago.
Wow.
Dude.
Wow. Time flies.
But doesn't it seem like so they say we went to the moon, right? 1960. Yeah, that... In fact, we orbited the moon in 1968. We went around and came back. The first time we went to the moon, we just orbited the moon and came back. That was 68, I believe. So let's take 68. 61, Shepard goes up about 60 miles. And then what? 7 years later, they go 250,000 miles and orbit another planetoid and come back. But it takes how many years since Burt Rutan did what he did? For them to commercialize their little op.
See, there's a big gap there. When was the first commercial airline flight after the Wright brothers took their flight?
Oh my God.
Within 10 years.
They were commercializing air flight almost immediately.
And I bet people were,
And so the question, were there people like taking people on flights? Like if they had a plane that could carry two people, were there people,
at the airport?
By World War I. You had planes that could take people places like that, certainly after World War I. So the point is, about 10 years later, it was commercialized. There was no government required to keep it alive or to keep it going or to keep people interested.
Sure.
Lindbergh crossed the Atlantic.
That was a big deal.
He crossed it, I think it was 1926, okay? But within a few years, you have commercial flights crossing the Atlantic. Within 10 years, you have planes doing that. So the question is, and then think about this. Think about all the arguments they make about how computerization has accelerated technology. That's the whole singularity argument. Computerization means we do things faster. So once again, riddle me this. Shepard goes up about 60 miles in 1961. We first orbit the moon in 1968, 7 years later. No supercomputers. We had computers, but we didn't have the computers we have today. None of that super tech. And we're supposed to believe they were all evil and racist back then. So since we're not all evil and racist anymore, we should be able to do things faster, right?
Oh, you'd think.
You know, we're more global. But yet, it took almost 20 years after Burt Rutan did what he did for Virgin Galactic to go up. And the first time they go up, yeah, Richard Branson goes up with them. But isn't that bizarre?
Very.
It doesn't make any sense. I can't put it.
It's like these club members are getting access to something, but it's not what they're saying. I don't know. So weird.
I don't get it. I think that if I'm supposed to believe people like Ray Kurzweil when they say that we're so close to technology accelerating beyond our control, then Ray needs to explain to me why it took almost 20 years for, you know, Virgin Galactic to do what they said they were going to do in a couple of years. Everything I'm seeing right now looks rushed to me.
Yeah.
Everything looks like last minute crap. Oh, have we done this? You know what phase we're in right now with America and I would say human civilization?
What phase?
We're in the phase of... Did you turn off the coffee machine? We're not going to be back for a while. Did you turn off the coffee machine?
I left the heater in the garage on.
Oh. Hey, did you make sure to feed the dog?
Oh, the dog?
Oh, boy.
Oh, we're not coming back for them.
They're not coming to Antarctica. They're not coming to the bases below the Earth's surface. But hey, did you turn off the iron?
Oh, ugh. Well, when the power goes out, it won't be a problem.
Exactly. I feel like we're in the phase when you're getting ready to go, and maybe this is not even like a trip, but you're getting ready to leave. Like, okay, let's say you're moving out of a house, and you're just moving. You're going. You're gone. The question, did you remember to pack this? Did you remember to pack that? Did you remember to grab this and leave that behind? Because we don't care about those people. I mean, that's what it feels like right now. Hey, did you remember to have a black president?
How do we shut down that nuclear plant?
Oh, we'll leave that for them.
Okay.
Hey, did we have a black woman president yet? Maybe we can, you know, arrange a little. Maybe there can be an accident for good old Smokin' Joe, right?
Ooh.
You see, I feel like going to the moon and traveling on Virgin Galactic, having a black president... All the stuff I've seen in the last decade, all of it looks rushed. Like, you gotta get it in before it's over. We only have a little bit of time left. And so if we're gonna, like, check all the boxes, well, at least America had a black president,
the
right?
The bucket list.
The bucket list. They are going down the bucket list. Oh, we gotta send people to space on, like, a private company to say we did. We'll do it a couple times. Oh, go back to the moon. We're gonna go back to the moon. How many decades after we left there?
Why? How? Yep. I thought the supercomputer that got us to the moon the first time died, and we lost the technology.
We lost the technology.
Yeah. The supercomputers, we got it back.
So we're going to spend half this show talking radio. My friend Justin, because he revealed his secret name, my friend Justin started listening to this podcast, I don't know, when was it?
It hasn't even been a whole year. Yeah. So maybe October last year.
So October last year, he was crazy and filled with rage and revenge, and he was driving all night smoking cigarettes, and he was listening to a podcast that drove him crazier, and it was mine.
Yeah, exactly.
But I took away your revenge. I took it away. I took that burden of revenge. I said, I'll take it. Give me the list. I'll take the list. You know, I'm kidding. No, Justin started talking to me about radio, shortwave radio, I would think back in January, February probably.
Yeah, around there. Yeah,
around there. And I was a little bit standoffish because I kind of given up. I really didn't think I was going to make it much longer there. Seattle was kind of a hellhole. And generally speaking, I didn't really have any hope.
Folks, let me stop you, Dan.
Go ahead.
When Dan says Seattle was a hellhole, I can attest. Some of you I know are still up in that part of the world, but I was approached by a homeless man. asked for, I thought he was asking for drugs. He looked like he was coming down from a high. Showed up, asked me, hey man, you know where I can get some St. Mary's? I didn't know what this guy was talking about. I thought it was a code name for heroin. St. Mary's was the homeless shelter.
They shut down.
That they tore down just, what, a month before?
Oh, they tore it down. They started tearing it down during the COVID, in the middle of the great pandemic. And I have it on, I have it recorded.
It's video. Yeah, you have the video. The no mask.
Some of them wore masks.
Well, but half-assed. Yeah. All their noses were out.
But the key is that the pandemic wasn't slowing them down.
No.
They were able to tear down that homeless shelter really, really, really fast and then put up some really cheap housing for one of Mayor Jenny Durkin's friends. And that's just one tiny slice of the hellhole that was
Seattle. That was one tiny slice of depression. You could see it in all the people walking. Their shoulders are slumped. They were in the smallest little bubble they could make for themselves. It was a version of hell.
Yeah. And so when Justin reached out to me about the shortwave thing, I was not very receptive at first because mainly I just didn't believe. And it took a lot for me to believe that he was real. These days it can really feel like... I do think this is an effect of the internet and social media, but we get really isolated. So when we need real people, I don't mean people on Twitter or Facebook, you know, come to your senses, okay? Come to your senses before it's too late. I don't mean Facebook. I don't mean Twitter. I mean actual people who take actual risks and actually care. I have been very lucky in the last couple years to meet a few people like that. Justin is not the only person. I've met a few people. I've had, you know, at least one family member, maybe more than one, but I don't really want to talk about that, that I would put in the same category. But in terms of just strangers that I would meet, mainly because of the podcast, I've met a few. But there's a lot of people out there who get isolated. They don't really have any community, anybody who would check in on them. And it must be a living hell right now.
That's exactly how they want it. That's how Twitter is built. Folks, if you're on Twitter, they're all fake. Everyone is fake. It's all a LARP. You maybe know 10 real people. I'm telling you this. I've seen Dan's Twitter experiments. I've seen the results. It's all nonsense. And it's all to isolate you. Put you in your little bubble. And where you think, oh, well, old rancher man is sitting on his porch drinking his liquor drinks after a hard day of farming. Folks, it's not real. It's not real. I swear to you, it's not real.
Oh, I saw a Twitter post today where they were posting scenery. And I'll tell you what, some of my favorite accounts are the ones that post scenery because what you never see are geoengineering trails.
Yeah.
You never see the gunkus skies. Seattle had nothing but terribly ugly gunkus skies almost every day I was there, winter, spring, summer, fall. And I grew up in Washington State. So if you're going to say, well, Dan, it rains there. This is not rain. This is some type of sky pollution garbage, not clouds, not rolling in from the Pacific, just simply arriving from the sky as planes fly over. And it was disgusting. And it grossed me out. The whole place did. Anywho, to get to the key topic here, Justin said, why don't you go on the radio? Because then you won't have to deal with the censorship. Then you won't have to deal with the barriers. Why don't you go on the radio? And I said, okay, but how do you do that? And he mentioned WRMI in Miami. What is it? A buck a minute?
A buck a minute.
A buck a minute. Now, let's say you're out there, brothers and sisters, out there in cyberspace land, and you have a podcast. So far, I have been happy and satisfied with the quality of what WRMI does. Would you say that they seem to do a good job?
They do a great job, yeah. I mean, we're here in the western states. They're in Okeechobee, Florida, right next to the swamp. And every show comes in, I'm not going to say crystal clear, but it's a very enjoyable experience to listen to on the radio.
Right. And the key thing is here, Susan Wojcicki at YouTube can't stop it. Jack Dorsey at Twitter can't stop it. Jeff Bezos can't stop it. If you want to be on the radio, you can contact WRMI in Miami.
Talk to Jeff.
Talk to Jeff. And you can at least get past those barriers. Is it a magic bullet? No, it's not. There are no magic bullets. Magic like that doesn't exist. But it is a way of breaking through that's still available to us.
Yeah.
And that's what shortwave radio and radio is. It is potentially a technology that presents a chance, maybe our last chance, at spontaneously building relationships, connecting the people. So, Justin, how did you get into shortwave radio?
Okay. I was a kid, and I would lay in bed, and I would listen. I had a boombox, just a regular old boombox. It had a knob on top, and you could switch AM, FM. And I would sit there, and I would scan through every single radio station. I loved radio, and it would put me to sleep at night. And I'd turn off the radio, go to sleep, and it was great. I asked for a shortwave radio. I just wanted a receiver. I think my dad thought I wanted a $1,000 radio or something. I didn't get it. But the love for radio stayed. And then I would say at the very beginning, February 2020, I had an urge to get back into radio. And I got a couple of Bafang radios and learned how to hack into the police network and listen, use it as a police scanner, fire an ambulance, all that good stuff. Learned how to use repeater towers. And then I wanted to upgrade. And I bought an ICOM 7300. Had no clue how to use it. Didn't know anything about it. Watched a couple of YouTube videos and figured all the ins and outs. And hooked it up. And while I was in North Dakota, just I used all the free time I had up there to dive in and learn the ins and outs of using this radio, what these nets are for that are on the radio already. It's been pretty recent, but it's been like full submersion for the year. Well, I guess it's almost 2 years now. I've been been on the radio as a pirate. So that's the key thing that, you know, as an anarchist, I really don't think the FCC needs to get involved with me using the radio.
So. Right. But I mean, that's the thing, though. The reason why the FCC cares that you use the radio is that once you're out there, they can't control you. They can jam you. The only thing they can do, really, is jam
that's
you
it.
Or destroy you.
And that's been done throughout history. The Russian woodpecker during the Cuban Missile Crisis days, Cold War days. Cuba, again, in the news. I'm sure you guys haven't heard about it, but it's all the talk in the ham world. That right now there's several frequencies being jammed to prevent communication in and out of Cuba. They don't want people to know what's going on down there. And I think that's both governments, that's the U.S. and the Cuban government involved. It only makes sense.
Would it be fair to say, because here's how I see it, and then you tell me how you see it. And this is different from when I was a kid, because when I was a kid, I believed the crap they told me. But the way I see it now, based on what I've read and understand, a lot of the Cold War was BS. A lot of the conflicts were BS. And I think it's fair to say that where we think we see conflict between two countries, there's way more cooperation.
It's more collusion than conflict.
Yeah,
for sure.
Exactly.
And you know what? You're right. You nailed it. Like, in my lifetime, I could imagine the Cold War being real. Like, that's the world we live in. Oh my gosh, it's a standoff with the Russians, you know? Neither one of us can start the fight or we'll all be dead.
Right.
But now, after the past 5-6 years of just seeing what's in the news, the garbage, you know, with the internet, you really see the back door. You can see what's going on behind the curtain. And you see everything else, so why wasn't? Everything else is BS.
Right.
Why not the Cold War?
Okay.
I'm sure.
So, before we've got about 15 minutes left.
15 minutes. Well, okay. We better dive into some radio
stuff. So, let's talk some radio. So, here's the thing. Justin helps me, in the very least, he pays for half the shows every month. So, if you listen to WRMI on Saturday or Sunday night, I try to deliver the content as much as I can originally. Sometimes we have reruns. But Justin is helping me 50%. Justin is the guy that kind of got me to do this. And he's part of this team we're building here. And one of the things we're starting to do with Planetary Status Report, we want to get doing, including tonight. So after this show is over, tune in to about, not precisely, but tune in to 7235 kilohertz. And we will have a planetary status, you know, discussion. But primarily, it's to do something called the Agorist Emergency Network. So the thing is, I'm not afraid of the FCC. You know, I call Joseph Biden the mayor of Washington, D.C. I'm not really afraid of all the threats they make. But that being said, what we want to do is call this a kind of emergency exercise, which is to say that...
A training exercise.
A training exercise.
Yes.
So both licensed and unlicensed ham operators can call in.
In an emergency, anybody can use the radio, any frequency that they feel that they're most likely to reach somebody who can help. That's a paraphrase right out of the FCC rule book. So what we're doing is we're using that loophole type thing to let unlicensed people test their equipment.
That's right.
If you need to be ready for an emergency. Folks, do you guys remember when was that explosion in Tennessee that nobody ever talks about anymore?
Oh my gosh.
It shut down the phones for 100-mile radius around, was it... Where in Tennessee was that? Nashville?
Was it Nashville?
Yeah, it had to be in Nashville.
Wasn't it some type of like actual terrorist thing or criminal thing?
Something like that. God only knows what that was.
Yeah.
And we'll never find out. But there were folks with no phone for quite a while.
That's right.
And we're to the point now with the supply chain issues that if something like that happens, the odds of the phones coming back on is getting smaller and smaller by the day, I figure.
And so one of the things Justin recommended, Justin did the research, and he found a frequency that looks relatively unoccupied.
We should reliably be able to use it
weekly,
and then it may turn into a daily activity where we meet on the radio, agorists, voluntarists, anarchists, all coming together. Resources, you know, sharing resources, whether it's information, physical resources, food, job opportunities.
That's right.
It's if you've used Facebook Marketplace, if you've used Craigslist or even a newspaper to buy things, this is going to be potentially the only alternative to that moving forward. And it's the only opportunity out there currently that avoids every form of censorship. You are completely responsible for your involvement. Nobody else can stop you. Nobody else can hinder you. A battery, some coax cable, a radio, and an antenna. The four things that you have to have, and you're on the air connected with other people who have the same equipment. And it's peer-to-peer, completely, I mean, self-supporting infrastructure. You know, you are responsible for your involvement.
And Justin, is it fair to say, if any of my listeners email me, and that's me@iamsully.com, that's M-E, Mike Echo, @iamsully.com. But if you were emailing me to want to know more about how to build up a radio setup, Justin, you'd be willing to help out, right?
I will give free consultation to anybody who emails Dan, me@iamsully.com. Email Dan, and I will help you get everything you need to get started. All the information, I can send you resources, recommended equipment list, whatever your budget is. Even if you have a $100 budget, you can have a package, a setup of two different radios, a Befang UV5R and like a shortwave receiver. $100, you're all in, and you can become connected with these nets on a very local level. Throw a little bit more money at it, say $1,000, and let's call it $1,500, and you've got the top of the line gear, can talk to the whole country, have the opportunity to receive help from anywhere and offer help anywhere, whichever position you're in. So, hit me up. I'm happy to help. me@iamsully.com.
And
Dan will get me those messages.
Another thing, too, is that these shortwave radios are capable of communicating on CB bands, too, correct?
Yeah. Okay, so that's another thing. Back to the Cubans, those guys are being jammed. They're somehow limited. I haven't heard the story, but they're somehow limited to a very narrow frequency wind allotment. And that's how these ham radios, if you buy one new, there are certain parts of the band that you can't broadcast on. There is a modification you can do. It's called a Mars mod. And all this information is on YouTube, and it's very easy to learn if you know what you're looking for. And again, email me. I'll help you find everything you need. But the Mars mod allows you to broadcast on any frequency. So in order to jam you, they have to be able to jam and willing to jam every frequency. There's ways to open the radios up, make them more powerful, more powerful as a tool, not necessarily more powerful broadcasting, but they'll be able to do more for you and won't be able to limit you. And it could get you on the air just like we are. If you are willing to spend a little bit more money, get an amplifier, do your Mars mod, you could broadcast on the frequency down that we're on currently and broadcast your own local pirate radio show that would be heard within like a 300-mile radius, I'd say, would be pretty effective listening.
Now, here's some key points. When you get on the radio and you start making contacts, keep a log. Keep a log of call signs. Keep a log of locations. This is not just to, like, keep a log to, like, you know, run up your points or whatever. That's not the point. It's to keep a log so if something happens, you can reach out to people. Let's talk about a realistic scenario, and it's not the end of the world. Let's say the Southwest were hit with a major heat wave and a major blackout that lasted several weeks, and there were other issues like, you know, water not being as available. And someone says, Justin, I have a friend in Las Vegas, and I can't reach them. Potentially, if you, because Justin, you have a radio, you could reach out to somebody in Vegas.
Easily talk to Vegas, yeah.
And that person you reach in Vegas could also potentially reach out to somebody and find out if someone's friend, brother, or sister is okay. I know this may sound like, well, you're oversimplifying, but this is the point. When these systems break down that we're told are so dependable, radio is that other system we can tap into so we can keep some form of society functioning.
Sure.
So we can actually do things like trade, not just trade information, but trade goods. I mean, here's the concept. Let's say you had two frequencies, okay? You had a frequency for receiving requests, and you had a frequency for taking those requests and hustling them out to experts. So you have a frequency that experts listen on, and then you have a frequency that people who need help. And when I say help, it could be information, it could be food, it could be trade. When I say help, we're talking about general crowdsourcing. So if you want to set up a crowdsourcing radio network, a really simple one, two people, okay, that run the core, that actually run the net, maybe one person, but one person who can switch between frequencies competently. So one person could do this. And then maybe 2 hours of the day, or maybe every other hour. 1 hour is for receiving requests. 1 hour is for hustling them out to other people. But the point is, you can figure out how you want to manage your time. This type of simple strategy means that people could be making requests into a system, and they could be getting responses back out again, which means that you could keep commerce and life, to some extent, functioning.
Food, you know? Info, I mean, jobs. I think jobs are going to be a big one.
A job. But even that's like, that's 2 weeks later. The first week, it could be a local hospital doesn't have a part.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, that's a great point.
Okay, think about this. You got a guy. You have a guy in Colorado with a 3D printer, okay? You have a local hospital that needs a part for a machine to keep a kid alive. They're barely keeping the kid alive. They're having to do all kinds of heroic stuff. If they had this one part, this kid child could survive. If you have the radio network functioning and you've already built up a list of contacts in your log and you were lucky because you found out that Bob, call sign whatever, is also a 3D printer guy, you could say, listen, if I can somehow get you the specs on this, could you build this? And then you have to figure out how to get it here. But the point is, with the radio, you still have hope. If you depend upon the internet and the phone systems working reliably, even in a disaster scenario, let alone collapse, I think that's a huge act of faith and assumption.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot going on in between point A and point B. It's actually A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H. A lot of failure points.
Yep.
If any one of them goes, the whole system is down.
That's right.
It's unusable.
It is.
So we can simplify. We can, you know, it's sure, it may not be as effective. You can't go, okay, Google, tell me this. No, it's a little bit more involved than that. But look, if you don't get the equipment, if you don't get involved now, while you can still get stuff, you're going to be paying people like me who have the equipment.
Yeah.
I mean,
and that's another good point too. Having a shortwave radio, and again, folks, I'm not telling you what to do. I'm not an investment channel. I don't claim to be an expert on anything other than simply staying alive as long as I have. So that's what I'm an expert at. But if you have a shortwave radio and it's day zero or day one after some type of collapse scenario, you have a way of getting food for your family. Because again, it's going to be people wanting to know about on a basic level, the first 2 weeks of requests, half of them could be, is my sister still alive?
Is Johnny still out there?
And you might not be able to help all of them, but if you can help a few of them, people are going to give you food, people are going to give you resources, and if you start building up a communications network, a crowdsourcing network, and I'm not going to tell you how to do it because it's not that complicated, do your own research, but if you start building up a network of people who want to handle requests and build up that network across the country, that's going to include doctors and nurses, retired people, experts, people with libraries, people that might even have the Encyclopedia Britannica. And if you pick up the shortwave radio and there's somebody that needs to know an answer to a question, this is a way to get that answer. It won't be Google, but it's also not going to be like 200 years ago either, 100 years ago.
No.
You know what I mean? We don't have to go back that far. We are not going to have Google. But then Google also lies to us, doesn't it?
Google is a double-edged sword, and people have cut themselves. Well, you've experienced the sharp side of the sword.
Yeah.
YouTube channel banned. You would have lost all your videos if you hadn't had them saved. I'd be in the same position. You know, it's at a flip of a switch. It's over.
Yeah, and it's ridiculous, but it is what it is. And it is, you know, it's funny because, like I said, Susan Wojcicki won this Freedom Award that was created by her own company, given to her. Isn't that bizarre?
Okay, so Freedom Award for ourselves.
Okay.
Agorist Emergency Network. After the show tonight, 7235 kilohertz, at or around. We want you involved. Listen on the Utah SDR. Dan, can you put that in the notes, the link to the Utah SDR?
Yeah, I can do that.
Okay, yeah. So that is your way to begin your involvement tonight. Log on to the computer, which you probably have, Utah SDR, and listen in. And learn this radio lingo. Learn the basics. The resources are out there. Again, if you need help, I understand there's a lot of gatekeepers involved. There's a lot of people who are going to directly send you to square one when you need to be in like square five already.
And there are a lot of ham radio Nazis, aren't there?
Ham radio Nazis, yes. They're, like I said, they're part of this gatekeeping community that they don't want you on the radio. That's their playground. So they're going to do what they can to keep you out. But nobody can stop you from buying a radio. Nobody can stop you from learning the shortcuts. Again, email me at iamsully.com. And Dan will process that request, and we will get you the information you need quickly. Get you on the air.
Yeah.
Join us there tonight.
Join
7235 kilohertz.
7235 kilohertz, yep. After the show. 7235. Stay alive. Come here to stay alive. Come to Colorado. No, I mean, come to Utah. Come to Utah, there's snakes in the cornfield. Okay, how are we doing on time? I'm going to double check here. Looks like we are almost out of time. So do you have anything you want to tell people before we check out, buddy?
I don't got a lot, but I hope to see, or rather hear, a few of you tonight on the radio. We're going to be there until the show's over, but we're starting. We're, you know, big shout out to Jim, out there in Arkansas. I hope you get a radio soon. I hope to hear you out there, but you're doing great things. Check out Jim at,
freedomlanddao.com. That's Jim Davidson. And he's working on an intentional community project.
These are the things that are going to see us through.
Yep.
That's, you know, so more power to all the folks out there who are taking responsibility for their own life, taking their power back and doing these great things that this is how we build the future that we want.
And isn't it you that said a few weeks ago, Justin, you've been saying this, we need to start now. Let's
not
wait.
We don't have to wait till the end. We don't have to wait till the collapse. Like, if we start building a foundation now, we can jump the gun and we don't have to be acted upon. We can act on our situation.
Okay. Well, on that note, I'm going to close things out here. We've got barely a minute left, but I'll tell you something, brothers and sisters. We learned a lot today. We learned a little bit more about shortwave radio. We learned that the moon is really a novelty trick. We learned that one day the joke's on us. But isn't the joke always on you, baby? Go grab a can of Spam. Go grab an egg. Go make yourself a breakfast or a dinner or a leckfast. 7235 kilohertz. Stay alive.